Welcome to the jungle. We start hour number two. It's a great day. It's setting up exactly the way that I said it would when I fired out an hour ago. We are live in the Quicken Loan Studios. Apply simply, understand fully, and mortgage confidently. Great day because I've got four of the Sweet 16 coaches scheduled for today. We have already done two of them. Chris Beard, Texas Tech head coach, was in hour number one. Just had a great interview with Mark Few, which I'm going to reset momentarily. Coming up in 15 minutes, I've got the head coach at Kansas, Bill Self. Coming up in the third hour, Coach K, Mike Krzyzewski, making it back into the jungle. We had three of the Sweet 16 yesterday, so before the end of today, if all goes well, we will have seven of the top 16. Start the program by talking about a podcast that Jordan Clarkson sat down for. And my man's got a lot of theories, lots and lots of theories, amazing theories, theories about mermaids being a real thing, theories about dinosaurs walking around back in the day, but being domestic pets. And when one of the hosts of this podcast said, well, let me ask you this, if a dinosaur is a pet, how big were the people walking them? Giant, like 50 feet apparently. In the meantime, LeBron James, according to ESPN, once gained, not lost, gained 7 pounds during a playoff game. I want to get into that as well. Going back to Mark Few, I thought Mark Few was fascinating when I talked to him about the first week of the tournament and the fact that a 16 finally got a one. And he talked about how Tony Bennett is not only a peer, but a good friend of his. And he said, Bennett's not a good coach. Bennett is an excellent coach. He said, arguably as good a coach as there is in this game. And a better person than he is a coach. But Few also said, I've been a one. We've been a one a couple of times. Those are not games that you want to coach in. It may seem easy, but it's not. That 1v16 matchup is tough. And it seems to me, if you talk to anybody who has been a one, every last guy who's ever coached a one knew that at some point, a 16 was going to get a one.
First of all, we've been a one twice. And I can tell you, Jim, that is not a fun game to coach to, the 1-16 game. You'd think it'd be a cakewalk, but you just, in the back of your mind, you just never wanted to be that team and that guy. And I remember playing Southern in Salt Lake with Kelly Olynyk's team. And, you know, they got us down to the – I mean, they were a low-possession game, and it was kind of a grinder, and they were – had some nice athletes and really defended well. And we got down to the 4-minute timeout. I think it was just a 1 or 2 possession game. And I mean, it was, the crowd turns on you. I feel like even the officials kind of get excited about part of history and just feels like everything's working against you.
Yeah, that's something I said after UMBC won that game. I thought that that's would be how it would go. I thought a 16 would get a one at some point. But I thought it would be a game like that, a low-possession game, a grinded-out kind of game, a one-possession game where maybe the 16 knocks down some miracle shot and they were off the floor. But again, that's not what UMBC did. I mean, they blew Virginia out. They hammered them. They beat them down. So that's not what that was. But Tony Bennett could not have had any more class. The guy's class, all class when he wins. And then when he suffered, you know, obviously one of the more devastating defeats in the history of the game, he was all class in defeat as well. But I guess in a way, it's not that surprising. Even 16s in a lot of cases are teams that win 25, 26 games. I don't care what kind of conference you're in. If you win 25 or 26 games, you're a good team. Or if you don't win the conference, but you win the conference tournament, that means you got hot. That means you're playing your best basketball when it matters most, and you win a few games in a few days. In other words, you're dangerous, and parity being what it is, and the depth being what it is, it was only a matter of time before a 16 got a 1. And this year's 16 nearly got to the Sweet 16 and probably could have, or probably should have. But I thought that Mark Few was really interesting the way he laid that out, that you don't want to be in those games. Those are hard games, because when they are close in the second half, then all of a sudden everybody in the building wants you to lose, and even the referees can kind of get caught up. All right, so in terms of what's topical and what's right, I should go to LeBron James next. However, I kind of want to stay on that animal theme. Since Jordan Clarkson got us started with dinosaurs, why not go from dinosaurs to bulls? Stay consistent with our theme And if you want to call the program, go ahead. The lines are ringing. The sparrow is not picking them up. He's too busy barking orders at the rest of the XR4TI. Get it, dude. Give me somebody other than Josh in Detroit to talk to. No offense, Josh. Yeah, Josh, I know you're ice skating. You've been calling me while from the ice skating rink now for like weeks. I know where you are, Josh. Anyway, there's this old adage. You know, the adage which speaks to the randomness of life. Adage being, sometimes you get the bull and sometimes you get the horns. My man, Martin Perez, apparently got both. For those of you who do not remember, Texas Rangers pitcher Martin Perez was spending his offseason at his ranch in Venezuela over the winter. At some point during the middle of December, the story broke that he had fractured his non-throwing elbow in a freak accident after a bull spooked him and he fell to the ground. That injury required surgery because the bull put him in the ground. Perez then spends most of the rest of the offseason recovering. Now, that'd be a weird enough story as is. Or it would be a weird story if it wasn't a baseball player, because baseball players suffer the weirdest injuries of all. They're always looking for new ways to get hurt. I mean, even the great George Brett missed 19 games after breaking his toe doing laundry back in 83. Or Glenn Allen Hill showed up to the yard on crutches after he had a nightmare in 1990. Carl Pavano lacerated his spleen, shoveling his driveway in 2013, and had to hang it up for good after getting damn near 7 liters of blood sucked out of his chest cavity. I mean, it's baseball. I could go on and on and on and on about all the injuries suffered in that game while not playing the game. Except unlike these other guys, Martin Perez apparently was plotting revenge. Like, that to him was not some kind of random thing. And far be it for him to be self-aware enough to say, man, that's my own problem. It's my own fault. I'm the one who owns a bull. I'm the one who got too close to a bull. That's on me. Oh, no. Oh, no. Martin didn't see it like that. Martin blamed it on the bull. So Martin apparently was looking for revenge. And revenge, as we all know, is a dish best served medium rare at 145 degrees. You see me working. You see where I'm going with this. Remember when I said, sometimes you get the bull and sometimes you get the horns. Apparently Perez got both. Here's the both part. This guy had that bull slaughtered. Quote, I killed him and I ate him. It was good meat. No more bull. End quote. I mean, holy crap, Martin. Remember never to roll up on Martin Perez. I'd hate that maybe you spook this dude and you wind up on a conveyor belt to death. I mean, that's some Hannibal Lecter stuff right there. Hey, remember that bag who called this show recently? Matt from Santa Cruz? He called up earlier this month to try to test my knowledge on the herbivore lifestyle. Matt in Santa Cruz. Matt, good morning. How are you?
Not here to judge, criticize, or make you feel like any less of a person. Very quick question. Do you know the difference between a vegetarian or vegan?
I did. And we covered it. And then he tried to hit me up with a follow-up question that went equally badly for him. And then he was done. Yeah, I got a new answer for you, Matty. I know Martin Perez is neither a vegan or a vegetarian. No matter how bad you and that bull he ate wishes he were. I mean, seriously, though, who's going to come out to the mound on this guy ever again? The second he took that knife and fork to that bull, the bull that dropped him, he essentially spray painted his name on every inside corner in baseball. Who's going to mess with a guy that slaughters and eats his enemies? The bull was minding his own business. You're the one that freaked out. I mean, I don't know if that's just savage or the very epitome of cruel. 1 minute you're on the ground with a busted wing and probably trying to make up some story to cover yourself. The next minute you're dousing a home-killed, homemade steak with A1. Let that be a lesson, I guess, to all the bulls on that ranch. You don't want that guy to own you if you're a bull. You don't want to be on that ranch if you're a bull. And if you are a bull and you're on that ranch, man, stay down. Behave yourself. Because Martin Perez apparently is not afraid to turn any wild cattle into his dinner. Hey, Martin, have your bull. Hell, have your bull and eat it too. I'd own it. I'm all about accountability. I'm all about responsibility.
Eat it, HUD.
No, I mean, even HUD would not have said that. I'm all about accountability and responsibility. You want a ranch? Great. You want livestock on that ranch? Great. You want a bull on that ranch? Great. You freak out and take a header as a result of a bull that you were not expecting? You don't eat the bull in response. Come on, man. Martin, a little overreaction, don't you think? And then again, I don't think you want to go out to the bump on that guy. Not without a knife and a fork. Wow. Imagine this guy dots some guy in the box, and immediately your first step, your first thought is your first step. You're like, hey, wait a minute. That's that dude who slaughtered his own bull. Yeah. Yeah, that'll happen. I'm fine. And then Martin's going to be looking at the batter like, yeah, that's what I thought. Yeah, that's what I thought. Exactly. That's what I thought. Take your base. Ed Charlo, first one in. Hey, Romy. I remember when Nicole and Ron rolled up and spooked me. Totally understand Martin Perez. Signed OJ.
Oh.
You know how in the history of my Twitter feed, which if I'm not mistaken, goes back to maybe 2009? I've never blocked anybody on Twitter. And believe me, there's some real idiots on Twitter. I've never blocked anybody on Twitter. Can I reiterate this? I have never blocked anybody on Twitter. And there are some idiots on Twitter. Ed, I'm more than willing to make an exception and make you the first. You know, for all the hate and all the vitriol I see on Twitter, I still have never blocked anybody. But if I see one more idiotic OJ tweet, you'll be the first. Think of all the just absolutely hateful things some people have said to me on Twitter. And I've never blocked anybody. But I'll make an exception for you, Eddie. One more OJ tweet like that. What's up, Alvin? You're looking at me kind of funny. Is there something you want to address with me? I know, dude. I know it goes on the other side of the glass. I know what you're all thinking before you think it. Den Lusks is in. I can already tell you without having pre-read this, it's going to make the show worse. I already know that. What the hell? Den Lusks tweets, good for Perez. I was once ganged up on by a chocolate pie, a rack of ribs, and a keg of gravy. So I devoured those thugs. Signed, Adele. You just called Adele fat. Fat. Den Lusks. I can go from never ever blocking a single person on Twitter to 2 in 2 seconds. And then what would that leave you, Den Lusks? If I blocked you, where would that leave you? I mean, I can't block you from the internet. You can still do your crappy shops, drop your crappy jokes. But if I blocked you from this show, then what? You'd have to find another show. You'd have to find another show to shoot off and thumb out all those tweets. Do you really want that, man? Do you really want that, Den Lusks? You know you're not going to find a bigger audience. Check yourself, son. Be very careful. Chocolate pie, racks of ribs, and kegs of gravy have never attacked anybody. Much less together. Yo, dude, who's in your gang? A chocolate cake, a rack of ribs, a big pot of gravy. Man, nobody messes with us. They know. They know they don't want any of this. They know they don't want any of this. Come on, man. Do better. Freaking do better. Do better. Hashtag do better. Be better. When we come back, luckily another interview. That'll make three. Bill Self is next. Mike Krzyzewski coming up next hour.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
Welcome back. We are cruising through hour number two, and another big day in the program in the way of the Sweet 16. As promised, we are joined right now by the head basketball coach at Kansas. He is a six-time Big 12 Coach of the Year. He led Kansas to a national championship, two Final Fours, 14 straight regular season titles, a member of the Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame. Kansas 29-7, and they take on Clemson on Friday night. That is a CBS game. Kansas head coach Bill Self is my guest. Bill, it's so good to have you back. How are you?
I'm doing great, Jim. How are you, man?
Great, great. Good to talk to you, Bill. Thanks so much. You're coming off a weekend where you said that maybe you didn't think you were very good against Penn, except for certain stretches. You thought that maybe the same was the case with Seton Hall. Bottom line, Bill, you've been through this thing so many times. Are you concerned about how the team played, or is it more just a matter of we win, we move, we advance?
I think you're always concerned, but certainly the latter is more important. You know, you win, you advance. If you looked at our team, and you probably hadn't had a chance, but you know, we lost our only low post presence a couple of weeks ago, so we didn't have him for the Big 12 tournament. We had to play different, and then you know he wasn't able to practice, so obviously against Penn. We tried to utilize him, and you know, it was limited minutes, but it just wasn't very effective. Plus, Penn is good. And then against Seton Hall, you know, it was his first time that he has actually really broke a sweat in a couple of weeks. And so we weren't as good as what we probably can play, but I think Seton Hall's good. And they got four guys that can really score. And after watching the tape, I was more pleased. I just didn't like how we finished the game, but I was more pleased than what I was probably during it. So I think we played a little better than maybe what some people think based on the competition. But we know we have to be better this weekend.
Fair enough. Bill Self, my guest. So let's talk about what you have now in Udoka Azubuki. 10 points, 7 rebounds, 22 minutes against Seton Hall. And, I mean, you did say this much, that if he doesn't play the way he did, maybe that's a much tougher game to win, and that's high praise. How much of an impact, then, did you see from him on both ends of the floor and even emotionally for the rest of the guys on the team?
Well, it was huge for us because Doak played 22 minutes, and the 18 minutes that he wasn't in there, now granted, Delgado wasn't in there the whole time, but Delgado basically got in the 8 minutes that he, I mean, in the 18 minutes he wasn't in there, he basically, you know, had 20 points and 15 rebounds. So even though, you know, Delgado had a monster game, Doak at least neutralized him some when he was in there and kept him off the offensive glass. So he was, and we didn't have to help on the post when Doak was in there, and when we did, you know, obviously they made three. So he was huge for us, and it gave our team a lift. You know, he was better for us defensively than offensively, but I do think that we have to play through him you know, from this point forward, however long it lasts. We've got to be able to get some inside baskets.
Right, so the fact that he played 22 minutes, Bill, how did he come out of that game, and where is he from a health standpoint? What kind of expectations do you have for his minutes against Clemson?
I think it's strictly conditioning. You know, he practiced on Friday. That was the first time he had done anything. Even on Thursday when he played in the game, he hadn't practiced. He hadn't broke a sweat. He hasn't done anything. So that was one reason why we limited it to him. And so we practiced him on Friday, and he played, and he didn't get that sore. So he took yesterday and Sunday off, and then he'll be full speed Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and he'll start on Friday as long as we don't have a setback, and hopefully I'll be worried more about foul situations than I will health, because we're going to need him in there for 30 minutes.
We're talking to Kansas head coach Bill Self. You know, Bill, of course, you have the Big 12 Player of the Year in Devontae Graham, but then you have Malik Newman, who I thought had a monster game. He had 28 points. What do you make of the way he stepped up on a night where maybe Graham didn't have his best game?
Yeah, Devontae labored, and he hasn't had very many games like that, but he was 1-for-7 from the field, and really wasn't himself offensively. You know, Svi had a solid game and gave us about 14, and LeGerald had a solid game. I think he gave us 12. But Malik put us on his shoulders there for a stretch and got us 28 and I think 18 in the second half during crunch time. So that was huge. You know, we've got a really nice team. Really, really nice team, but there's not a lot of margin for error because we don't have a lot of depth, and we really need all five starters to play, you know, fairly well, and if we're not, then obviously somebody's got to have a monster game like Malik did. But hopefully moving forward, we can continue to have some balance. But Malik's been the difference in our team the last couple of weeks.
You know, going back to Graham for a minute, though, he is a senior, which means that any game could be your last game together. What has he meant to your program and to you personally?
You say this all the time because we've been spoiled. We had Frank Mason last year, and I said last year that I don't know that I've coached anybody that's meant more to our program than Frank, and until this year. Hey, Devontae's meant every bit as much to our program as Frank and all the other great ones we've had here. He's probably the most popular kid on campus. He's the best leader we've had. Statistically, you know, he's averaging 17.5 and 7.5, which are unbelievable great statistical a year, you know, unless Trey Young's in your league and he's averaging 27 and 9 or whatever. But he's been as good a leader as we've ever had here. So when you talk about KU greats, you know, he's definitely a guy that'll get his jersey hung in the rafter and certainly deserves it.
Bill, that's such an amazing statement that he might be the best leader you've ever had. But then again, from the second he walked on campus, you were telling him, I need you to be a vocal leader. You've got to be a strong vocal leader. And his response at the time was, how am I supposed to yell at guys like Wayne Selden and Perry Ellis? What did you see in him early on that made you believe that he could lead the way he has?
Just personality. You know, some guys just have it, or you know, you talk about that it factor all the time. Anybody that meets him knows he's got that, but it's hard to lead if you're not talented too. So, you know, knowing that his talent level was such, and knowing that he was comfortable with his own voice, and certainly was used to being vocal and that kind of, and his personality just naturally lends itself to be vocal. It was an easy thing for me to see that this could be as good as we've ever had in that area. Now, one thing I didn't anticipate was we talked about Frank last year committing to Towson or signing with Towson and become the National Player of the Year. I didn't anticipate, you know, Devontae, who signed with Appalachian State out of high school, to become a first-team All-American. But certainly, how he goes about his business and how hard he works and his attitude allows him to be great.
Kansas head coach Bill Self joining us for a few more moments. You know, there was that point in the season where you were not in first place in the conference, and then there was that talk that maybe this was the year that the streak of regular season titles would come to an end. I mean, Bill, bottom line, how much does that streak mean to you, and then what do you make of the way the team responded to that challenge?
I'd be lying if I said it didn't mean a lot. Certainly to win a league like the Big 12 14 years in a row, I think speaks for itself and speaks volumes of the great players you've had in your program. And I think our players and our ex-players take great pride in that. Now, granted, it's not as important as going to a Final Four, and I know that. And we've got to – you know, we haven't always performed our best in the NCAA tournament. Hopefully this year will be different. But the bottom line is, you know, it's a remarkable show of consistency. And we know that if we can be the best team in our league, then we'll be in the game nationally. And we have been. We've been in the game nationally. But now we got to go punch that ticket.
Hey, before I let you go, I had Alvin Gentry on the show earlier this season. We were talking about the unreal collection of basketball minds in Lawrence with Larry Brown, a list that included Gentry, you, R.C. Buford, Greg Popovich, and more. I mean, it seems almost unreal, not even possible. What do you remember most about those days?
They were great. You know, you can also throw Calipari in that
sure,
mix.
Sure.
And Bob Hill. And then, of course, all through Roy's staff, too. It's been an incredible run of guys that have come through here, and most of those guys was obviously that you mentioned were Larry guys and the staff he was able to put together and the success that they've had after they left here. But there's a lot of great minds out there, and certainly opportunity creates so many of those, and I got to say, Coach Brown has given so many guys an opportunity to do so many things just because of their connection to him. Look at Greg Popovich. If he didn't come here to be a volunteer coach from Pomona Pitzer, would he had ever had a chance to coach in the NBA? And there's just so many stories like that. But my roommate R.C. Buford, who's arguably as an effective of management guys there is in the NBA. There's so many, but really Coach Brown is the head of that tree.
It's an amazing thing. Before I let you go, I've got to ask you about Clemson. They beat Auburn by 31 on Sunday. Yeah. So what were you thinking as you watched that game, and what's been your message to your players about Clemson?
Well, they beat them by 31, but it wasn't that close.
Right.
I mean, had them down 40, and certainly they're so well coached. Brad is a terrific coach, and he's getting his due like he deserves. Everybody's known it for a long time, but the guy coach, they don't make mistakes. You got to beat them, and they've dealt with some adversity, also losing a key player, and they've rallied around that. But hey, their perimeter's as good as we played against all year, and certainly they got a big guy that they can play around, and so we kind of mirror each other in that way, and they don't give up easy baskets. You got to make plays against them, and certainly they're capable of beating anybody.
And a great matchup Friday night, Clemson against Kansas. It is a CBS game, 7:07 p.m. Eastern. The head coach of the Jayhawks, Bill Self, my guest. Bill, so good to run you down. Always look forward to the conversation, and I appreciate it so much. Great to have you on, Bill. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, Jim.
Bill Self, making time for it. The week of the Sweet 16. By the end of today's program, if all goes well, we are going to have 7 of the Sweet 16 coaches on already this week. All right, stay with it. Telephone number is toll-free, 1-800-636-8686. Obviously, a busy Tuesday morning. Let's get you caught up. Here's the very latest sports update.
Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio.
That makes three of the Sweet 16 coaches, and Coach K is still ahead. That'll make 4. Go back to tomorrow, and that makes 7. Trying to run down as many of the Sweet 16 coaches as we can before they tip it off. In the meantime, you want to make the right game plan for you. Farmers Insurance has practical insurance knowledge gained from more than 89 years of experience. Find an agent at farmers.com. The problem with talking to Bill Self, inevitably, the conversation will turn to Larry Brown. Because of the coaching tree and the types of coaches that have come through Lawrence. So he talks about Larry Brown. We talked about all the assistants, all the huge names, and he ties it all back to Larry Brown. So what do you clones think when you hear Larry Brown? You don't think Larry Brown, Knicks head coach. You don't think Larry Brown, UCLA head coach. You don't think Larry Brown, Kansas head coach. You don't think Larry Brown, great teacher. You think Larry Brown... You think Toby in Houston. And I don't know why that's still going on. Like, this guy's got a Twitter handle, which I'm not even going to read on the air. Larry Brown bleep. You can imagine what that might be. We've done Romageddon. You've heard the call. I played it. It should be over by now. Turn the page. We don't need to go back there anymore. I played the call on the air. I did the one thing that I said that I would never do for the rest of my entire career. You clones got over. You won. You got me to number one in podcasts. Number one. So I said, if you get me to number one, you know what? I'll do it. Clones, I'll do Bum Smack. I'll do Personal Appearances Show Fodder. Most of all, I'll play the phone call that I said that I would never play again for the rest of my life. And I did. You won. You got over. So why are you still wasting time on this? Why would a guy still have a Twitter handle, which is Larry Brown's bleep? You're wasting your time.
I used to live in San Antonio.
It's kind of like you got to wait for the next call. You have to wait for the next amazing or historic or unbelievable telephone call. Why are you still locked in on that call? It's old. It's done. I played it. Move along. Do something else. All right, let me talk about the NBA for a minute. And the NBA's got a problem. The NBA's got a big problem. The NBA has an addiction problem. But the thing is, not only is it not necessarily the addiction you might think that I'm going to talk about, it's an addiction that almost all of us share. Difference is, we try to keep it a secret. But thanks to a piece, a great piece by Candace Buckner in the Washington Post, a spotlight is being thrown on that addiction. Of course, I'm talking about an addiction to cell phones. You know me, before I go any further. Like, I don't want to be the guy, I don't want to be a hypocrite. I don't want to be the biggest hypocrite ever. You know I'm a degenerate for cell phones. But the irony here is, I'm not addicted to using them, I'm addicted to buying them. It's kind of a fine line here. I just like pulling it out of the box. I like that new shiny thing coming out of the box. Once I get it, I'm kind of like, oh, is that all there is? Really no great change here. I'm not on my phone all day long. However, I do think about buying a new phone all day long. But not these guys. I mean, this is such an issue that teams now have policies about when you can and cannot be on your phone. You know, like you do with your kids. The Lakers have not banned them, as an example. But if your phone rings during a breakfast meeting or a film session, then there's a fine. Stan Van Gundy of the Pistons realizes the only time his guys are not on the phones is when they're in a meeting or they're on the floor. The Bucks, they've made a rule that before a game, players can only be on their phones to manage their music playlists. And there is an exception for players like Jason Terry. Jason Terry uses a game on his phone as part of a pregame routine. So there are even deviations within the hard and fast rules. All right, so check this. This description from the Post. Before an early season game in Washington, four of the six Phoenix Suns players in the visitors' locker room were checking their social media feeds less than 70 minutes before tip-off. And the two abstaining were eventually pulled in by rookie Josh Jackson, showing off an Instagram post. So you've got two of these guys who aren't even on their phones, and then they got roped in by one of the guys who was on his phone, so all six of them were on four phones. I mean, it's amazing, but it's so real. Kelly Oubre said, quote, "I feel like we're too dependent on the cell phones and the social media to hype our egos, make us feel good when at the end of the day, that comes from yourself. It's just a crutch, honestly. I call it the SMD, the social media disease." SMD, man, that is heavy truth. And he's not wrong. And that's coming from a guy who admits he carries two cell phones. You can't kick the habit. You cannot kick the habit. Just ask Memphis Grizzly Dillon Brooks. The rookie said that when he first came into the association, he tried to break his habit of busting out the phone after hitting a big shot. And then he saw NBA locker rooms. Quote, "I try to stay out of it, but like when you walk in after a game, every single person is on their phone just looking at Instagram, looking at Twitter." End quote. I mean, Brooks, he's like that kid in the anti-drug PSA saying, "I learned it by watching you.
I learned it by watching you.
I learned it by watching you.
I learned it by watching you."
And as Buckner points out, here's when it all started. It all goes back to 2009 and this legendary tweet by then Milwaukee Buck, Charlie Villanueva. This was an amazing tweet. This is almost 10 years ago. Quote, "In the locker room, snuck to post my twit. We're playing the Celtics, tie ball game at the half. Coach wants more toughness. I got to step up." And you want to talk about live tweeting or live in-game tweeting? My man was playing in the game. It's incredible. Maybe the single greatest tweet in NBA history. And truly, the patient zero of NBA tweets. A guy tweeting, and not a fan tweeting in game, a player tweeting in game. A guy tweeting at halftime of a game to update his followers on the status of that game. And the halftime talk. And what the coach said to him. And his plans for the second half. Only thing better would have been this guy running the floor with his phone in his hand and thumbing out a tweet during a play. And from that moment on, it was clear. You're never, ever going to rip the phones out of these guys' hands. It's impossible. So the best you can do is try to figure out how to manage it. And that clearly is still a work in progress. And I know what you're thinking. It's a millennial thing. Blame it on the kids. Blame it on the youngsters. But it's not just the millennials. It's not just the kids. Jason Terry is 40. He's a man.
I'm a man. I'm 40.
Come at him.
Come after me.
He's practically a baby boomer, and he can't put his phone down either. And you know how I know he's got a problem? Because my man reportedly is rocking an iPhone 5. A 5. Jason Terry, Jet, multi-millionaire, world champion, rocking an iPhone 5. One of the legends of the game, walking around with a relic and proud as hell. That's when you know you have an issue. That you're intentionally carrying around a brick so that you don't have access to more stuff. I think that's why he does it. You know, kind of to mess with the young kids. But most of all, he knows that if he has an iPhone 5, it's going to have limited battery, limited access to apps. You can only do so much on an iPhone 5. It's almost like the guy's checking himself. Like a self-filter. Because if there were anybody in that league who could carry an iPhone 5 and make it look cool, I guess it's the Jet. So on that level, I kind of respect it. Hey, Jet, you want my respect? You got it. You want my respect? You got it. But you really want my respect? Next time, break out a Motorola Razr. Thumb out your tweets off that bad boy. I wonder if you can even get a Twitter app on a Razr. There's got to be somebody who still rocks that Razr. And I'll never forget it. I waited on that phone because that's one of those guys that I knew the phones. I knew what they were. This is how much of a degenerate I used to be. Not only would I never, ever buy a phone, a domestic phone, or buy it here domestically, because you could always get the phones overseas first. I knew what was coming out before it came out. Not because I was inside, but I mean, I spend an inordinate amount of time on blogs that would speculate. And I don't mean just like the iPhone blogs before they drop. I mean lots of different blogs talking about lots of different phones. So I knew what was coming out before it came out, and I always wanted to be the first guy. So I was always the idiot that paid that black market price. You know, you can wait a week, or you can get it first and pay 50% more. I was that idiot. But I'll never forget walking down the street and hearing these kids, and I was probably, somebody looked that up. When did the Razr drop? The Razr probably dropped 10 years ago or more. I had my phone out. I broke that thing out, and these kids were like, dude, look at that old man. That old man's rocking a Razr. Like, I had crazy street cred with that Razr. September 2006. Let me see, I almost called that, right? 12 years. Man, the form factor. The form factor on that thing was sweet. I mean, did that thing even have a battery? Where did they put the battery on that? I would love to know what kind of apps, if any at all, you could rock on that. I mean, can I post from my gram from that phone? Can I tweet from that phone? What would it be like to get the Facebook, the latest Facebook update on a Razr? Man, I love that phone. Jet, do it. If anybody could pull that off, Jet, you could do it. You're already walking around with an iPhone 5. Do it, Jet. I kind of want to go back in time. I'll never forget when I got my first T-Mobile Sidekick. Damn, that was such a badass keyboard. I love that thing. I love that thing. I had a buddy of mine, guy who played some college basketball that I knew. We were all about it, all about it. We actually went to a Sidekick launch party at the Grove. And I mean, you couldn't believe the line down the street for miles to get in and get that Sidekick. And then he finally got his. He didn't get his that night. He was so pissed. He finally got his. He went into a meeting later that week. And then everybody rocking their Blackberries laughed at him, mocked him, and said, yo, bro, you going to the mall now to play with that Sidekick? 2 days later, he was on a BlackBerry. Love the phones. All right, stay tuned. We're coming right back. Coach K coming up next hour. Do not go anywhere.